This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week's episode was recorded on March 20th, 2016. This week, George and Nick join me, Mike Rappin, to talk about comic book exclusivity contracts and what that means for what you're reading and who you're following in comics. We end the episode in a small chat about Batman vs. Superman and our thoughts about what this movie means for the DC Cinematic Universe. And now, this week's episode. This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. I am your host, Mike Rappin, editor-in-chief for Destroy the Cyborg. With me this week are two fantastic human beings, Nick White.
Hey.
And George Benson.
Hello.
Thank you both for joining me. George, I'm so happy that you're back on this podcast. We had a big, you know, we did a one-year get-together between me and Paul and Nick and Xander, and we sat down and talked about it, and I basically said, you know, if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have this show, so I'm so glad that you're here, so we can actually, you know, talk about comic books again. This is an exciting time for me.
It's exciting for me, too. I remember sitting in the bar and talking about this with you. I'm just sad that everything has transpired to where I haven't been able to be a regular part of it, but hopefully that's going to be something that changes within this next year.
Yeah, man, I'm looking forward to it. But yeah, you know, I want to ask you guys the question I ask every single week. How have you been and how have comic books been? So Nick, what's been up with you?
Comics for me has been a lot. There's been a lot of reading going on, but it's been a lot of old stuff, to be honest. There's been a lot of catch up involved. I read Lazarus Volume 3 in preparation for the fact that I picked up Volume 4, or rather my shop. I got it from my shop a couple weeks ago. And every time I read that book, it's just, we're so spoiled with that book. We really are. There's really no other way of putting it. Just the amount of research that goes into that book, the complexity. It's simultaneously complex and yet approachable, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And it's just such a great narrative, and I'm always a big fan of that book. And I just started Volume 4, which seems more action-oriented, which it's really nice that each of the arcs kind of has a bit of a tonal shift in terms of what's going on. But Rucka and Lark, just a fantastic read. Art Ops continues to be consistently absolutely batshit insane, and I love it. I think everyone needs some sort of book on their pull that is exactly like that. Imperium 13 was going to be sort of the will-they-won't-they issue for me in terms of whether I continued it or not. Thankfully enough, they really focused on Livewire and sort of her origins and her interactions with Harada as a kid.
Ooh.
Which is something they've never really gotten at, which has been really interesting because obviously at a certain point there's sort of an action of, you know, minor spoilers. This was a long time ago, but kind of a betrayal when she leaves the Harbinger Institute, where she was sort of a little bit of the right-hand man to Harada, and left to, you know, side with Unity and whatnot. And we never really got to sort of see their early beginnings and their interactions. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, their relationship was really interesting early in that story, because it seemed like they had known each other for way, way longer than, like, just a, you know, an employer to an employee level.
Yeah, so, yeah. So you actually get to see him interacting with her when she's, like, maybe 6 or 7, like this really, really young kid, and he comes and talks to her about her potential and whatnot. But for me, the biggest thing is I sat down and got to read Predator Life and Death number 1, which of course is sort of the beginning of Dark Horse's attempt to more or less recreate that wonderful sweet spot that was Alien, Fire, and Stone. It's a little bit different this time. They're not getting 4 different writers. It's going to all be Dan Abnett, which for me, you know, Abnett's not crazy, 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 crazy good, but he's very, very bankable. He's sort of like a Charles Soule or a Bendis for me. Like, his output is really, really high, and it's consistently great, but I don't ever think it's fantastically stellar.
That's so many words that all mean the same thing, Nick.
Yeah, exactly, right? And it's a little different this time because we're not getting each... With Fire and Stone, it was every single week there was an issue of each one of the 4 books rotating. And I guess they've decided this time to go with We're going to get Predator first, and then right when Predator finishes its fourth issue, we're going to start Prometheus, and then when the fourth issue of that ends, well, we don't know which one's going to come after that. We don't have the solicits for that yet. But I'm hoping it's a really well intermeshed narrative, even though really this time around it seems like when Prometheus starts, it's merely going to just pick up where Predator left off with a less Predator-oriented focus and more of a, you know, the engineers focus from Prometheus. So Dark Horse is getting creative these days. I'm excited. You know, they don't have Star Wars anymore. Hellboy's kind of on the way out, so...
Yeah, this seems to be their next bank, or at least as far as you've been telling me. You seem to be a little bit biased towards the Predator and Alien stuff, but
right.
As far as I know, this is their next bread and butter series, right?
Well, I mean, it's not like they have, obviously, and I know this isn't what you're saying, but it's not like they didn't have it in the past, but I think they're like, yeah. Oh shit, maybe we ought to give a little more focus to this. And that's not to ignore the fact that Dark Horse is more independent and... sort of image-esque books that they're rolling out here and there haven't been stellar either. I think Brian Wood's Rebels has been really interesting, and I'm really excited for his Aliens Defiance series to start next month. So, but that's what I've been reading.
Cool. Well, I'll actually go next for once. I'll go second so that we can give George time to prepare. what I've been reading this week, I sat down early this past week and I read... some of Mark Waid's Daredevil run from 2011. Since the Comixology did a huge sale, I bought all of the Mark Waid books and like an idiot spent way too much money on it, but it's totally worth every penny.
Could you spend way too much money on this run? I mean,
yeah, that's the thing. I when I say I spent too much money, I mean I bought too many comics at once, but it was worth every single penny. I don't know how I'm going to sit down and read all of them. It's going to have to be like two or three issues a night for the next, you know, 2 months, but I'm totally
it's
okay
always
with
a good
that
feeling when because, you know you can do that though, you can burn through a couple and not feel like, well, I need to make this last. I need to ration this.
Exactly. And so I read just issues 11 and 12, and I think I had read the first 10 issues a while back, so I didn't want to, as I was just like flipping through them to see what I remembered, I realized that the story wasn't that complex, so I happened to jump into 11, which is a part 3 of 3 of a crossover with the Amazing Spider-Man series and Punisher, where it tied back to a thing that had happened in Daredevil, and I remembered reading about it online, where Daredevil had this ultra drive, or this, then they were trying to fight the quote-unquote mega crime groups. So, like, Hydra and AIM and all these different people show up, just endless numbers of humans, and it was so much fun. It's a really good read. And then 12 started the next arc, and I don't want to dive into it too much, but I also read All-New Wolverine number 6, and if you're not reading this book... I'm sorry, you are wrong. You need to be reading this book. It's fantastic. I absolutely love it. Nick convinced me to buy Double Barrel a while back. There was like a bundle for all the Double Barrel, like 1 through 10, I think. And this is like a digital only series that'll eventually get collected. And so I sat down and read that, and that is a very out of the ordinary read for me. But I did like part of it. The Xander Cannon story about, what's it called, Nick?
Was that Crater or was that Heck?
Heck, yes. I read Heck. Oh, and I see George read that too. Yeah, so
I actually
that's
just
why
saw Crater published in book form when I was at Vault on Saturday. So
nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's been out for a while.
So I read the first couple chapters of Heck in that Double Barrel number 1. That was really good. I also read Alias number 1. I was reading like Daredevil and Alias side by side, kind of gazing myself up for the Daredevil release, which I haven't actually sat down and watched yet.
The TV
series, that is.
I haven't seen any of it yet.
I know.
I smashed all of it yesterday.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness. Yesterday being Saturday, the 19th.
Yeah.
For those of you who are, you know, paying attention. But
I started it on Friday, but I finished it yesterday.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. So I read Alias because I've never read that series, but I own all of it. So I sat down and read that. But the big thing that I actually read this afternoon was Extraordinary X-Men number 8, which is the beginning of the Apocalypse War that they're doing. And I'm so just like not ready for this to happen to my brain. Like 8 issues in to Extraordinary X-Men, I think like 5 issues into Uncanny, and 7 issues into All New X-Men, they're already doing a crossover event that has to do with Apocalypse. It's like, I mean, I understand the reasoning for it, like, because the movie's coming out, but at the same time, I thought Marvel was trying to stick it to Fox, but who knows, they're still just trying to sell comics. Nonetheless, the story, was not even remotely close to what I thought could potentially happen. I'm going to spoil this, so if you haven't read on Extraordinary X-Men number 8, I'm sorry. But
which one is that again? Is this the Hopeless or the Lemire or what?
This is the Jeff Lemire run with Storm running the X-Mansion, which is in Limbo. And I mean, the place Limbo, not like uncertain.
Oh, but, of course it is. Why wouldn't it be there?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, long story. What was really cool about this issue, though, is that we got a little bit more backstory about what happened between the end of Secret War and now. Why we got a little bit of information or insight as to why the X-Mansion is in Limbo. And so, because there's like two stories happening right now. Magic has found this mutant who has like unbelievable control over demons. Whoa. And that seems to be her mutant power. So she takes this little girl to Doctor Strange, and she's like, I need help with this, and you're kind of really good at demon stuff. So they do a little bit of
it's on the back of his business card there. Really good at demon stuff.
Yeah. And what was really cool, though, is that Magic gives, she says, you know, thank you for helping us with the X-Mansion. And they do a little bit of, they do a little flashback panel where it looks like all of the mystical powered people in the Marvel Universe helped move the entire X-Mansion to Limbo to try to save the mutants from, you know, all these rioters and people who are against this quote-unquote M-Pox. As in classic X-Men fashion, there's so much context into every piece of, like, story plot that happens that there's no way I could actually explain to you what's happening. You might as well just go read the comic. But I really liked this issue, even though I'm not ready for the crossover. I liked the direction they went with it, even though it was 1,000 years in the future and Deadpool is one of the Horsemen of the Apocalypse, and apparently Colossus is now Apocalypse. I don't know. I just don't know.
What?
But
you love it, though.
I liked the part with Magic, but I didn't. I don't know. I'm going to keep reading. That's what it comes down to. So, whatever.
Well, but you're also a sucker for X-Men. So
exactly.
Exactly. I'm totally a sucker for all of this. So I'm munching down on these nasty Big Macs, even though I know they're going to kill me. So, George, what did you read this week? We'll just move on from
that.
Oh, my
God.
I'm just going to clean.
No, that's the perfect segue, because I'm reading Batman and Robin Eternal.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I love Batman. I've been reading Batman for 25 years. I learned how to read reading a Batman comic because I'm dyslexic. My teacher thought that it would be great to have comics because of pictures and it would help with words and everything. But this series is so bad. Oh, God, it's terrible. Like, if you look at so we'll go down the list.
It's almost like Shatner-esque delivery there, George. Oh, I liked it.
Thank you. I practice in the mirror every night. So it's so bad that I'm going back and rereading books that I love.
How bad? Oh, okay.
Oh, man. So stay tuned for about 3 weeks from now, because I'll be doing a postmortem on the series.
Yeah, look for that on Destroy the Cyborg coming up pretty soon.
Yeah. So I'm reading that, and I went back and I reread Men of Wrath, which is a great Jason Aaron, Ron Garney book. I mean, if you like Southern Bastards, you need to read this, but be warned, because it is more brutal than Southern Bastards could ever hope to be.
Ooh. Oh, man.
I mean, it is just within the so here's a spoiler alert, but this series has been out for a year and a half at least. So there's one character in which he makes a baby do a disappearing act.
Oh, no.
I feel like you've generalized this action in ways to not offend people with the specifics.
yeah. I appreciate it.
Oh, it's rough. And then I went back and reread. I'm rereading God Hates Astronauts because Blast Furnace, which is another creator-owned book by Ryan Brown, came out about a month and a half ago. But this it's my favorite series. It's just so ridiculous and is just continually making me laugh. And then Heck, which is a great Xander Cannon book, is actually the first thing I read by him. And it's this nice, you know, hardcover, black and white, where this guy named Hector Hammershmorg finds a entrance to hell in his dad's house. And so he creates a business in which he does will clarification. So and it's all based on, Dante's Inferno. And so Everybody goes to hell. And so it deals with the same, you know, circles and everything. So this guy He makes you sign a contract, and then he'll go find your loved one and clarify this will or answer any questions or get closure. And it starts off really funny, but it gets really dark.
Exactly.
Yeah. I could totally see that.
It's one of the best books that people have not read. And then Lock and Key, which is just a phenomenal series.
Have you read that series before, Lock and Key?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is my third time reading through it.
Oh, no way. Nice.
Yeah, in 2 years, nonetheless.
Dang. Oh, man, I read all but the last volume of that series. I should probably finish that up sometime.
Mike, I mean...
I know.
It'll make you cry. I've cried so many times and laughed so hard at this book. It's just so...
Yeah.
And the way that it ends is... It's good. It's really good.
Then George just gives away the ending to Lock and Key, and then...
Oh, man. It was so crazy when Cthulhu came out of the sky. Like, who saw that coming?
Thank you.
Air Force was summoned, and yeah.
But the craziest part was when Jesus Christ shows.
Spoilers.
Man, spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Well, we all know he's coming back. I mean, come on.
Don't call it a comeback.
Yeah. Well, okay. We're moving on. We're moving on. So, Nick, what are you excited for this upcoming week? I see that you and George actually have a tie for your first. You're breaking rules and you're picking two books, but I'm going to be okay with it because I understand how massive this book is that you've both picked. So, yeah. What are you excited for this week?
Yeah, I realize I might have not made a good impression by George being on again and, you know, being like, oh, ties are okay. Well, we generally poo-poo ties, but we let them happen on occasion. And Batman is one of the few exceptions to the rule that we allow for. So
typically.
It would be a complete sin to not say that Batman 50 is not going to be a big deal. It will be an awesome, awesome deal. I think Super Heavy is one of the best runs that we've had. I think it's one of the best runs Snyder has had, which is saying something because most of his have been pretty great. I didn't like Zero Year, but whatever. You can't bat 1,000, right? And it's going to be interesting to see where this all goes in terms of you know, just how we wrap things up with Mr. Bloom and maybe sort of what post-Bloom trajectory we have for Batman. As a book, especially with, you know, Snyder moving over to Detective and whatnot, it's going to be interesting to see how the, you know, tonal shifts of both books go and also what they decide to do with Commissioner Gordon. One would have to believe that his Batman days are going to be done, but maybe they'll get creative. I also wonder what they're going to do with Alfred's daughter. I hope they find a way to keep her around. I think that would be great. Beyond that, which, again, as I said, Batman 50 does not need my help. No one needs to go, oh, well, Nick said Batman 50 is great. I was on the fence, so now I better go get it. Obviously, yeah. That book does not need my assistance to get people to go buy it. Beyond that, Bloodshot is getting an annual. This is a big deal because it is Valiant's first annual since they rebooted, which, depending upon how you feel about annuals or how you feel about Valiant maybe slowly recreating the trajectory of the comic book bust of the 90s, maybe you aren't that excited about annuals being a thing, but it's going to be like 64 pages, it's going to be like $6, but much like their anniversary issues, when some of their series have hit the 25 issue mark, such as Archer and Armstrong or Exo Man of War, it's not going to be a conventional annual where it's kind of a standalone book where, like, for DC or Marvel, it's like either you get it or you don't get it, but you don't feel too lost. It's more of an exploration of the characters. So we're going to get a Jeff Lemire Kano story that sounds like it's basically going to be something along the lines of Bloodshot goes to whatever the name of that lake was for the whole Jason Voorhees thingy. I forget the name of that summer camp, but basically sounds like Bloodshot versus Jason Voorhees, which that sounds hilarious. And then they're bringing a bunch of other creators on board. Ray Fox, writing and drawing, which I know people are going to get really excited about this. So let me preface this. I'm actually going to say something positive about Ray Fox on this podcast, everyone. So Tia and Kate, you know, sit down, buckle yourselves in. I think Ray Fox's art is great. I'm excited to see that. Who knows about the writing? And Paul might want to pay attention to this book because the guy who writes Copra, or I think he does Capra all by himself. I'm not certain.
Michael Fife.
Yeah. He's actually going to pen a Bloodshot story for this as well. So it's all over the board, all sorts of interesting.
Oh man, that's exciting.
Higher, you know, bigger names and smaller names all on the same book. So should be really interesting.
Wowzer. Well, George, I'm gonna let you jump in since you also picked Batman. What are you excited for this week?
The fact that this is the... So Capullo and Snyder have been on it consistently since, you know, the relaunch. And this is their last issue before Rebirth. So I'm just excited to see a nice bow be wrapped on their run. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, this is going to be one of those runs where, like, the omnibus is going to be a must-have for a lot of people. Like, I would even consider buying this perfectly length, perfectly sized Batman run and say, look at this full, complete story arc complete itself in 50 issues. It's like Transmet or like Why the Last Man, but with a superhero book. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited about it. And I'm really excited about the Rebirth stuff that's going to be happening, even though we won't know more until Wednesday about it. But I don't know. I'm just, it's an exciting time to be a fan. And then Obi-Wan and Anakin number 3, which Charles Soule, that guy, he can write anything and I'll read it. I mean, yeah. I'm not...
And he is writing everything.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's toned it down a little bit since he's been exclusive with Marvel, which we'll talk about later, but, you know, I really appreciated this guy's DC stuff, and I'm not the biggest Marvel fan, and I don't think that that's a secret, right. But I love his run on Daredevil so far. But his Star Wars stuff, man, Lando, that was amazing. Yeah. I'm really excited.
Yeah, I only heard positive things about Lando. Like every person that I've talked to that's read that book is like, this is the Star Wars book that
I really want that in trade. Yeah.
All I'm going to say is you will cry over Lobot.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, those man. Words will probably never be said again on this podcast.
Probably not. but I love what he's doing with Obi-Wan and Anakin and, you know, like the father-son type of dynamic and Padawan and teacher. So, and, you know, it's great. So I'm really excited about that. And I'm excited about Star Wars 17, I think comes out this week as well. But between those two, yeah.
Gotcha.
I think it's really interesting that Marvel has really wisely not tried to blow things open in terms of some of their Star Wars runs. Like, you know, Lando was just 5 issues and Princess Leia was like 5 issues. And I like that they're not trying to turn 80 billion things into these huge ongoings. You know, some things just don't need to be fleshed out to eternity. You know what I mean?
Oh, I'm with you. I mean, I read every Star Wars book that comes out. I'm a huge Star Wars fan. And I really didn't like a lot of the Dark Horse stuff. But I wasn't able to read it consistently. Ugh. And I think that was part of the issue. But I love how they just kind of relaunched everything and that they're doing miniseries with it. You know, the Poe Dameron series that Charles Soule's writing with Phil Noto.
Yeah. The pre-order numbers on that book are nuts.
Yeah.
It's 200,000 already. And I'm sure that number is probably loot crate padded. Don't quote me on it. I'm sure that's probably part of it, but...
Yeah.
Potentially, yeah.
Well, but I mean, even still, you know, people are hungry to know about characters and everything, you know, because all we have to go off of for the comics, at least, not including the Aftermath book and the sequel that's going to be coming out for the Star Wars, the new extended universe, is the Shattered Empire stuff, in which we see Poe's parents.
Right.
Oh, man.
Yeah,
I heard about this.
Poe's mom is the main character in that book.
I did not know that.
Yeah, I mean, I went and reread it before the morning that I did the Star Wars marathon before I saw Episode 7 twice in the row at the theater. I mean, so it's crazy what Marvel's doing right now with their Star Wars stuff is just genius, and they're having a giant sized issue just based on C-3PO coming out.
Yeah, I did see that. Like the covers alone for that book make me just want
to. Maybe that's their litmus test as to seeing how far people will go.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah. I can't wait to read it. I can't wait to read how he got the red arm.
I hope it's like really action and like gritty and like, you know, he actually kills a bunch of people.
Oh man, no!
Big bandana and a cigar in his mouth and a huge machine gun.
Oh my god, how great would that be? The only way that would be better is if it were like. No, here we go. Here's my pitch for this book. Super gritty. Everybody's dying around C-3PO. And you've got Danny DeVito painted as R2-D2, and he's walking C-3PO through everything.
Yes.
And there's just this huge smoke trail off the barrel, and he just says, "Thank the maker."
Yep.
Oh, man. Is this directed by the cast of It's Always Sunny? I can only imagine.
Yeah. This is... It definitely has... So I want it... No. I want it written by Charlie Kelly and Rob McElhenney from It's Always Sunny.
Yep.
But...
Provided he also puts a song to it.
Oh, yeah. But it has to be produced and directed by Jerry Bruckheimer and Michael Bay.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Well, okay. I'm gonna
Marvel, if you haven't finished writing that book yet,
I'm waiting for the phone call. I mean,
yeah, George has got some ideas. Well, what I'm excited for this week is totally unrelated to any of those completely, and I am excited for The Spire number 7, which is the penultimate issue of the series. If I'm using that word correctly, I always feel like I'm screwing that up. Second to last, that means it's almost done. Yeah. Okay. Good. Whew. Got it. So yeah, this is. The series is wrapping up pretty soon. I actually did myself a service before I read issue 6 and kind of skimmed through 1 through 5 so I could kind of keep track of people, because I have this bad tendency with books that aren't X-Men to just lose all sense of continuity when I'm reading them. So I have to go back and refresh my mind every so often. And so far, this book is so stellar. It's such a cool little dystopian world where everything is awful and hilarious at the same time. And this book isn't so much so funny like, I guess, Six Gun Gorilla, so much as it's just like gritty and there's a lot of pieces in play constantly churning, and we're going to get this moment where everything lines up. And I think that's going to be the last episode or the last issue in the series. So 7 is definitely going to be a huge build up to this. I don't know if there's going to be a major war or if someone's going to die, but there's a lot of things in place that are at risk, and I'm really excited to see how it all pans out. So this is going to be a very, very good build-up issue. If you're not reading this book, either trade weight it or go back and see if you can find 1 through 6 at your local comic book shop or buy them online. I know Boom does this really cool thing where, if I'm not mistaken, if after like 2 or 3 weeks after an issue comes out on Comixology, they drop the price down to $2. So that's really nice. Cool. So if you want, you can easily go back and buy these comics online at a cheaper price. This book is awesome. It's classic Simon Spurrier, and the art is a little out there. It's a little weird, but I think once you get into this book, it all feels really natural, and it's very well crafted. So that's it. I mean, I don't know, this book is going to be fun. I really enjoy Simon Spurrier's writing. That's pretty much it. This is one of those creators where I at this point will read pretty much anything that he writes. But yeah, anyways, okay, so we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're actually going to talk about something that George touched on for a minute about exclusivity contracts with different publishers, what that means, and what that means for your buying habits. If you're a creator follower, like, are you going to be buying all Marvel or just DC or something, depending on where a creator is, you know, latched onto at the current moment. So we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about that. So 2 seconds.
So for our listeners, we are currently at the point where C2E2 is wrapping up in Chicago, the Chicago Comic-Con event. And one of the bigger announcements to sort of come out of it, although I think it technically might have preceded it by a day or two on Twitter, was that Valiant went and made a bunch of their creators, 15 to be exact, exclusive, including such names as Pere Perez and Clayton Henry, and Brian Reber, amongst others. And for Valiant fans, that was not a big surprise. A lot of these people had been pretty much largely, especially the artists, not so much the colorists, but largely working for Valiant exclusively anyway over the past year or two. But it really caught my eye being such a large number, and it made me think of the fact that DC's also been making a lot of exclusivity announcements within the last 2 months. And it sort of begs the question of, what does that mean for you as a reader when your beloved writer or artist or colorist goes exclusive? How does that change your buying habits? How does that change your approach to what you want to pick up or not? And so I figured this would be a really good topic to dive into for today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is something that, you know, Marvel and DC have been, you know, pretty much the primary, I guess, like, contributors to over the last 20, 30 years, saying, oh, look, now this big person or this person that a lot of people are reading, you know, they're exclusively signed to our company for X number of years, and they're only going to be creating comic books under our title or our imprints. So for Marvel, that means Marvel and Icon, and for DC, it's DC and Vertigo. So it's been interesting to follow, especially when it comes down to, you know, I don't know, as someone who's been primarily reading Marvel for a long time, and, you know, I've been obviously reading, you know, Image, Boom, Oni, all that stuff for probably the last 4 or 5 years, I never really kept track of that until I really started following creators. So it was kind of strange to notice, huh, I've been reading a lot of Brian Michael Bendis, and oh, look, he only writes for Marvel. That's kind of funny. I didn't actually realize what that was until I started to look into how the industry handles that stuff. And I don't think that's as big of a deal anymore. I don't think we see as many creators getting signed to this stuff as often as it was maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I mean, if you look at the history of news or whatever Bleeding Cool or CBR is posting about, I don't know if you guys feel the same way or not, but to me, it doesn't seem like as big a deal.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you there. It feels like we're in kind of a post-binary world, in the sense that things just aren't Marvel or DC anymore, where, you know, if your guy isn't working for your company, then he's obviously working for the other company, and so you either have to start, you know, branching out past, you know, your beloved one of the two, or basically kiss them goodbye and hope that, you know, your company manages to, you know, steal someone off of theirs. So, but with Image, with Boom, with Valiant, with Oni, perhaps to a lesser extent, a lot of these people are working for other publishers anyway. And with a lot of these exclusivity contracts, they're being allowed to work for these other companies. So, you might not like that Jeff Lemire is no longer with DC, but you can still go read him over at, Valiant or Image, or possibly in the future with that, I think it's called Black Hammer or whatever that book is called, Dark Horse. So, I mean, you've got options.
But I don't think Jeff Lemire is exclusive anymore. I mean, he was exclusive to DC for a very long time.
Oh, right. Yeah. I mean, he's exclusive to Marvel now, though.
He actually is?
Yeah, he signed in May.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm behind the times on that one. But I don't know. I think it is kind of a big deal, though, in that, you know, it's great to follow the creator, but you start reading somebody because of a character that you love, typically. And I'm speaking right as, like, you know, I'm generalizing, you know, quote, air quote, old school comic readers. I started reading Charles Soule because I was reading Swamp Thing. Swamp Thing was written by Scott Snyder, and then I think it was issue 18, Charles Soule took over. And this was his first mainstream character. And I really started to like him as a writer, and I met him at C2E2 that year, and I found his creator-owned book. I believe it was... Shit, I can't remember the name of it. And you know, then he started getting picked up by DC to do Red Lanterns and a couple other books, and then with Marvel...
So good.
Oh, it was such a good run. It was the only time I've liked Guy Gardner. But
that's because he was Guy Gardner in his element, 100%.
Yeah, but what I'm getting at is, you know, there's a lot of characters I don't care for. Probably more than I actually do care for. And so, you know, Daredevil was one of those where I could take or leave, but I really liked Mark Waid's run because I like the way Mark Waid writes. So I followed him to that book. And then I got lucky when Charles Soule was taking it over, who is a real lawyer on top of writing comics.
Mm-hmm.
So... Yeah, I don't know. I think it's interesting, especially with how, you know, you have those two types of exclusive writers, where it's either somebody who's been writing for a long time, like Bendis or Snyder, or Steven Orlando, mm-hmm. who was writing Midnighter and has done a hell of a job on that book, and speaking to a population that in the mainstream comics has been marginalized to. but he's giving such a great...
Especially in terms of solo books, yeah.
Exactly. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But he's giving such a great voice to it that they're smart to lock him down so he can explore other, you know, other characters.
Which makes it kind of awkward or weird that he's done such a good job with that book, and I trade-weighted it, so I have yet to go pick up my copy, but obviously I know it's been received really well. It's kind of odd that they're, like, patting him on the back for that, and then it's not 100% at this point, but also canceling his book.
Yeah, but they're also getting ready to do Rebirth, too, and so you have to wonder how much of that...
Right.
Is a part of it.
I hope DC manages to keep that character around or not get him lost in the shuffle, because unless DC wants, and we've talked about this before, unless DC wants their next big PR nightmare on their hands, they better do this right.
Well, I mean, yeah, but I don't... Here's the misnomer with that statement, though, is I don't think anybody enters into something saying, man, I really can't wait to fuck this up.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah. Of course.
I mean, I agree with you. I think that there's a couple of different ways that they can move about this. But the truth is, we only know what the, quote, Rebirth titles are going to be for June, July, and August. We don't know what's going to happen in September. And traditionally, DC is they'll have this huge crossover in the summer or a huge event. And this isn't, you know, it's characteristic of Marvel as well. And then things will start to get more explored as the fall happens. Because they want to reestablish the tentpole characters and then go from there. And so, we'll just see what happens with that. But I think that, you know, he's clearly a talented writer. And so any character can be, even a terrible character. I mean, look what Grant Morrison did with the Batman Club from Batman Incorporated. You know, El Gacho, the Argentinian Batman. So... I don't know. I think it's really interesting with some of the people that they're getting exclusive, and it does affect books with, you know, because if I know that somebody that I've followed for a long time is going to go on to a character that I really like, of course I'm going to jump on that book. But if he's exclusive, so Jeff Lemire, I hate X-Men. I've never been an X-Men fan. I've tried. I just can't get into it. I like Jeff Lemire's writing, but I have not liked this X-Men run by him.
I heard he's being shown the door really soon on that book too, Mike. Unless I'm wrong, Jordan and I were looking through solicits yesterday, and I think he's off the book, starting with like 8 or 9 or something.
Yeah, I haven't been following the solicits with that, but I mean, if we're gonna talk about that book, it's had a really rough start, and I think that's I think that's because team books are not Jeff Lemire's forte. At least, I don't know. Maybe.
I agree.
I don't know if I agree, though. I mean, Sweet Tooth.
I did not like Justice League United.
Oh, Justice League United, I love. But, like, if you look at his creator-owned stuff, Sweet Tooth, yeah, okay, Gus is the main character, but that really becomes a team book.
Yeah, but I think that the key difference there is that it started as Gus, and it grew into a larger group, right? So we got this focal character, and he continues to be the focal character throughout the story, but there's also like the supporting characters. But with X-Men, they tried to grasp too many characters, the stories at once. And so what happens is no one gets the proper amount of time and focus, and it just feels muddled, I think. And on top of the layer of mystery of what happened between Secret Wars and Extraordinary X-Men, like, there's just this big gap of questions, and no one really knows what this book is about. And I think it's slowly starting to get into its stride here. And if Lemire's off this book after 8 or 9, that'd be kind of sad, because I think what he's developing is very powerful. But it definitely there was a lot of hiccups when the series started.
But yeah, I mean, that really puts forth the idea of if you're, you know, person, for example, Jeff Lemire was, I'm more of a DC person, and so he was writing a lot more of the books that I was reading and switched over to Marvel, and was that enough for me to switch over and start reading X-Men? No, I mean, it hasn't been. It might be enough in the sense that I might actually try the new Moon Knight, but then that really comes down to, you know, your creator switches sides, like... Are they switching on to books that you might feel more comfortable or you might find more accessible or not? And I think that's also part of the whole, you know, switching from one point to the other. You know, are they switching on to things that make it consumer friendly for the readers to also, you know, go over and consume that material?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. So Before we go a little bit further, I realize I should have done this earlier. So when we're talking exclusivity contracts, we're talking about, you know, contracts where a writer basically says, you know, I will only write for this publisher and I won't write for anyone else. Like there, but there are exceptions to that rule, right?
Mm-hmm. A lot of the time, if you're in the middle of runs or you've already made promises to other publishers, those will usually be honored. Although sometimes it feels like whichever one of the big two you were signed to kind of encourages you to wrap up whatever those things are.
Yeah. Well, and not only that, but all they really care is, so if it's a major person, or not just a major person, but a major company like DC or Marvel, as long as you're not working for the competition, like, nobody's going to worry about you writing a creator-owned book for Dark Horse or for Image,
right,
because...
Right. There happens to be those very few exceptions where you get creators like Charles Soule, who ends his run at DC. I think it was Red Lanterns. He had to finish up while he was currently working at Marvel. And he made all these promises saying that, don't worry, I'm going to finish this book the way that I wanted to, and Marvel's okay with that. And everyone was kind of like, oh my goodness, that's such a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, especially because, you know, you've got... So he was already writing Death of Wolverine during that time, I believe, or at least... Maybe the first issue would come out. He was smart in that he wanted to end it on good terms, and he had already signed the exclusive deal with Marvel. But the fact that DC didn't fire his ass right away,
yeah,
that's a big deal.
Yeah, that was right? Impressive. Which makes me wonder, I mean, we can't really know the internals unless we, you know, actually worked for one of these publishers, but it's you got to wonder, like, what kind of handshakes are being made to make these types of things happen, you know? But I don't know.
I mean, I think it's also smart on the publisher's side that, you know, it's, hey, you're a great writer. We would love to work with you in the future, so we're not going to try and burn this bridge. I mean, if it were somebody like, I can't think of a name, but if you just did a couple of issues for DC and then signed a, you know, Marvel really wanted you and you signed an exclusive deal with them and then you went to go work for Marvel, I think it'd be a different story, you know?
Yeah. So as far as these, like, exclusivity contracts go, like, What do you think the real, I guess, big deal is when somebody who goes from, like, a small name publisher, you know, they're just doing, like, an independent book? Like, for instance, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think, is Tom King now signed as an exclusive writer for
yep.
DC now?
Yep.
And he was doing his independent series, like, outside of that for a little while, and that's ended now, right?
Which one is that? I guess I'm not certain which
wasn't
book
wasn't he didn't he have an ongoing before that, or maybe I'm thinking Omega Men is DC, so never mind.
Yeah, Omega Men's DC, and then he had what was it, Sheriff of Babylon,
Sheriff of
which
Baghdad.
Was Vertigo or Baghdad? Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But, right. That's
in terms
that's
of predating Grayson. I'm God. I feel like there's something, but I'm grasping at straws.
Yeah, we're terrible at this. We didn't do all of our research. We're sorry.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. Like, and we've seen like a lot of creators, I guess, you know, fall out of their exclusive contracts and almost leave on bad terms. In the case of people like, you know, I guess like Matt Fraction and Kelly Sue DeConnick, I think, and I don't think it's necessarily like bad terms, but it's like they left because of major creative differences in the way that their stories were being told, because they wanted to go yeah. out and do independent stories. I think someone like Brian K. Vaughan is another example. He was exclusive for Marvel for a little while and then decided, no, I'm going to go do way bigger and better things, you know, at Image. And that's been his bag ever since. And I think that's the way that, you know, Kelly Sue DeConnick and Matt Fraction have gone as well. Right?
Yeah, because she's not writing Captain Marvel anymore, right?
Right, yeah. I think she ended her Captain Marvel run and someone else is on that book. But that's interesting to see, only because, like, it's a wonder about how, like, I don't know, insane these contracts can be. It seems kind of obvious, you know, like, exclusive means you can only write for us, but it's like, these people, in my mind, I think it's like they need to be able to also make money, and if you're only... you know, writing for one publisher, there's a limited amount that you can actually do. And I mean, on top of, you know, how much you're getting paid. So it seems like, you know, once you've made a name, this is like, you know, Marvel's big claim to fame that, you know, we made someone big and then they went off and did their own thing. But it seems like it's almost way too confining to keep these creators there. Or do you think it's something like they want to make sure that they get all of the best ideas so they don't allow these creators to work on independent work, you know, that's not being published with them?
I could be 100% wrong on this, but I thought I've read this in a couple different places. People have said that you might think, well, if you only work for Marvel, gee, how many books can you write? How restrictive is that? You know, you have a lot of writers like Charles Soule and whatnot, where when they're not exclusive, they're writing 80 bajillion books. But and I can't remember who said this, but someone obviously said that when you're working exclusively, obviously now you're under contract and there are certain benefits and insurance and things like that that come with no longer being freelance, and that makes up the difference for a lot of these people, that they maybe aren't quite as prolific as they used to be. And I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I mean, it's such a weird topic because, I mean, how many people who are just reading comics casually care about this? Not a whole lot. I mean, you know, I mean, and so it's...
None of them.
Nobody gives a shit. No, but it's one of those things where it's like, you know, we can sit here and split hairs all day long, but it's still speculative because neither of us work for a major publisher. I highly doubt that one of the three of us will ever get an exclusive deal writing or doing anything for these guys. But it's just, I don't know, it's weird as a fantasy because I didn't want Charles Soule to stop writing Swamp Thing. I thought that the run is perfect.
Yeah, I know I'm sort of in the minority, and obviously with you in that I think actually Soule outwrote Snyder on that book.
I think he outwrote Alan Moore. I think that the best run was still Bernie Wrightson and Len Wein, the creators of the book, because it had this different poetic bend to it, and it was still a part of the DC universe, just like Phantom Stranger was when Len Wein was writing them. And so, you know, so part of me loves the fact that I know that Snyder, even though I don't think it's become official that he's going to write for Detective Comics, but he's still going to be doing something for DC. And I know that he has a Wonder Woman run that he wants to do, and that him and Capullo are taking 6 months apart so Capullo can illustrate Mark Millar's new book, and then they're going to be back to working at DC. So I'm super excited about that because I know it's probably going to be a character that I really like, or somebody that, even if I don't like them, I'm going to trust that this character is going to be great because these guys are doing that book.
Yeah. I would really love to see them basically do what, you know, Jeff Lemire did with Animal Man with another character. But I know DC is ultimately going to say, like, you need to be on something more high profile than that.
Well,
which is fine.
I don't know if I agree with that because Snyder's proven his track record. And so...
Oh, absolutely. He's such a name now, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like, so is Lemire when he took over Animal Man.
Largely he really only had what, Sweet Tooth and what was that book? Whatever County though, right? I mean,
Essex County. He also had
Essex, that's right.
Lost Dogs and Underwater Welder. I mean, he was a bigger name when he took Animal Man than Snyder was when he took over Batman.
Yeah. That's true. I mean, Snyder really only had what, Gates of Gotham and Amvamp?
And his run on Detective. Oh, and Iron Man Noir.
Oh, goodness, how could I forget Black Mirror? Yeah. That's true. But I think what's sort of interesting is, we've always said follow characters, but I think one of the benefits of maybe being like, well, maybe I don't want to follow, you know, Lemire leaves Animal, well, not even leave Animal Man, but it leaves Green Arrow to go off to Marvel, and... I think there's still benefits, like you were saying, George, there's benefits to sticking around and seeing what happens with the character, because you might think that you're really, really attached to the creator, but perhaps to some extent you're also interested to see what other people do with the character, because I find character reinvention to be fascinating. It's just sort of, with there being 18 billion comics out there these days, people are risk averse to a point that maybe that's not really something they're interested in. And with Arrow, I stuck around, and it turned into when they let Kreisberg and the other people from the show on board to write the book. And,
it was terrible. Well, it's because...
I regretted that so much. But yeah. I waited it out. I waited that out. And I really like what Percy and Zurcher are doing. So...
No, I'm with you. I mean, I think that one of the worst things that anybody does is with these companies is when they try and make their... comics so much like the TV show so that people can jump aboard.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, I love Batman, but I also know that the TV show Gotham is not written with me in mind. And so I can't watch Gotham because it's not.
Well, with like Green Arrow, there was an even bigger offender because Arrow had its own damn book. It's like, why do you need to make Green Arrow like Arrow 2? And I know I've said this 18 billion times. People that listen to this, I apologize. but it can't be said enough. But maybe it can.
You're passionate about it, so you know, whatever. But
hey, you know, as a person who only watches the Arrow TV show, I'm not sure if I would like the Green Arrow book. Like, as just to add a counterpoint to that, only because I've never read Green Arrow. I think I read the first issue of Green Arrow, year one or year zero, whatever that arc was with Jock on art.
Jock Diggle. Oh, so good.
Jock and Diggle. And I don't know. Like, it didn't hook me the way that the TV show did for some reason.
You're
I don't know.
Tearing me apart, Mike.
I know. I'm a terrible
it's
person.
It's not
right
okay
now,
to, like, not like year one.
Yeah. Well, you know.
We're not that open on this podcast. There are certain things you aren't allowed to dislike.
This has been Nick's last episode, so, you know.
As long as that's been made public, I think we'll be fine. Yeah.
Right.
But, no, it's interesting to see how these work. It's, you know, the whole thing with exclusive contracts is just to try to, you know, garnish this whole follow the creator mentality that I think people have been pushing, and we've been pushing for a really long time on this show, you know, just to see, you know, come over and read a new Marvel book. You never know what you're going to like. But unless you already, I think it's tough because unless you had like a slight interest in a character that a creator might be writing, you're probably not going to jump on that book. Like for instance, we keep going back to this Jeff Lemire like example, but it's perfect because I don't think that either of you are X-Men fans, and yet you maybe tried the first issue and went, no, this is not for me. And that's because you're not X-Men fans. You're not ready to jump into that sea of murky garbage like someone who's already been living in it for the
last
10 years.
I'm just imagining you in like an old like swimming pool like filled with like landfill and garbage, and you're just in there, and we're sort of standing on the edge, and you're like, you guys aren't ready for this.
Here's a cup, take a drink. It's awful, but you know, eventually you learn to like it.
You need to develop the taste for this.
Yeah.
But you're totally right. Maybe if it would have been like a solo X-Men character,
yeah,
like I really like Cullen Bunn, and that's made me consider, I'm gonna screw this up, I can never remember, is he on Magneto?
It was
on Cyclops?
Yeah, the Magneto series ended. Yeah,
but he ruined Aquaman, so he can burn in hell for all I care.
Oh man,
George is one of those people we heard about then.
God.
Like the people that like his first issue, I mean, you at least gave him a chance, right? Because I heard like 3 months before even the first issue premiered, people were furious.
Oh no, I read the entire series. I mean, Aquaman is my favorite superhero.
Oh, okay, sure.
And so, like, I realized I have that baggage going into it, but, like, he should never have written them. But Colin Bunn, though, he's one of those guys that's writing 1,000 books, and he will always write 1,000 books. And so, I don't know. There are just some, I think that there are some characters people just should not write, because their voice is so different. And
George is just worried he didn't give him enough TLC, like he didn't have enough time, you know. George was going to call Protective Services on Cullen Bunn for his Aquaman.
I mean, when you're right, you're right.
I see him, he's all alone, no one pays him any mind, he's just walking the streets by himself.
I mean, yeah. I mean, and I like Cullen Bunn,
he's always
too.
Hanging out with that Harrow County.
No, but like Magneto is such a good book. I'm not an X-Men fan. Yeah. I really like Magneto and what he's doing with it, you know. What was it, The Sixth Gun? Phenomenal book. But Colin Bunn should just never have written Aquaman.
Well, no, and that's an interesting thing to think about. Like, you know, I realize this is kind of straying from the original topic, but it's interesting to see how some creators just get mismatched. And it's a question of, like, maybe they're trying to, like, boost the sales of a book, so they put a big name on it, but the big name just isn't right for that team book or for that, you know, that character book. And it's interesting to see, because I think, like, for instance, you know, Brian Wood's run on Moon Knight, I wasn't a huge fan of, but I kept going because Warren Ellis had set the series up so well. And then of course, Cullen Bunn followed Brian Wood up, and it was great. Like, it's just, it's bizarro to see how that happens sometimes.
No, but I think you hit the nail on the head, though, when this does tie back to the whole exclusive contract deal, because Jeff Lemire is known for writing characters. And what I mean by that is he can take any person in a comic, or even if it's his creator-owned stuff, and just bring so much character and so much humanity to that. And X-Men is traditionally one of those books where it's like, okay, well, this is an allegory for social commentary. Now, for me, I tried to read a lot of, I felt like I was just always jumping in at the wrong time. And so, it would...
Yeah.
It would make perfect sense for someone like Jeff Lemire, who has signed an exclusive contract with Marvel, to write X-Men with, you know, such a rich history and all of those characters. But I don't know, maybe his voice is just not the right one for it.
Well, I think if I'm gonna explain it to jump on top of what I talked about earlier in the show, I think the problem is that he just doesn't have a character to latch onto, except for in issue 8, he found his character, and it's magic, and it's like talk about the most unseen character that I would have thought of. But magic as a character is the perfect character for him to write, because she's got this broken history, she's got a problem with her brother, she's trying to be a leader, but at the same time, like, battle with her own demons. And in this little aside story that they did at the end of Extraordinary X-Men number 8, you totally see that. And like I said, it redeemed the whole issue for me, seeing that. I'm like, holy cow, I want more of this story that they followed up on. But the primary story of this whole Apocalypse War thing is not his thing. He's trying to do a story with Wolverine and Storm, and it's just not working. Or I guess Old Man Logan, I guess, is what it is. He's not actually Wolverine. And it's not really working. And he tries to throw quips in with Bobby Drake, and it's hard. It's really, really hard. So I don't know. I think it's just a matter of him finding his right character, and unfortunately, I think it took 8 issues for him to find the right character to put focus on. But unfortunately, again, you know, it's not the primary story, so I don't know how long it can last.
Yeah, it sort of reflects this whole idea that whenever you, like, reel in a big fish, so to speak, or whatnot, there's some understated pressure that you need to put these people on, you know, big, big, big name books, you know, right at the forefront. Because otherwise, you know, what are you doing? It's talent wasted, quote unquote. In the same way that DC grabbed, you know, John Romita Jr. And obviously a lot of this was the fact that he explicitly wanted to write wanted to draw Superman. But, you know, they're like, we got John Romita Jr. And I was like, oh, okay, fine. And we're putting him on Superman. All right. But I mean, clearly that means something for other people, but, you know, sometimes it's better to just let these people work, you know, maybe a little bit more in the background and flesh out characters that, you know, don't have a reputation that precedes them, that aren't characters that aren't going to sell issues every single month regardless, you know? That's my two cents on it, I guess.
Yeah. I don't know, man. These things are weird. We don't know.
So, you know, this is I Read Comic Books. Follow creators or don't.
Yeah.
Or do whatever you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or save yourself the pain.
Or just as clueless as you.
Yeah. Or save yourself the pain and just stop reading comics.
Yeah, that's the outcome of a lot of these episodes, so we're sorry.
They get really nihilistic. Yeah.
Get a cat and you'll be fine.
Yeah. So totally unrelated to this topic, I'm just going to shift gears real quick. Are you guys going to see Batman versus Superman this weekend?
I don't know if I'm going to see it this weekend, and I don't want to step on the soapbox with both feet, you know, at least for too long here, but Zack Snyder is not 100% my jam. I think he's great at nailing the look and aesthetic of things, which when he's adapting comic books, obviously that's a big, big, big important part. But his movies just feel kind of devoid of a soul, which, I mean, to put a real blanket statement over it, I'll probably see it at some point, probably within the week, but I'm not crazy about him, and a lot of the zany shit that's been rolling out of David S. Goyer's mouth over the last year or two makes me a little disinclined.
When you say zany,
a little less excited, I should say. I'll go see it, but I'm not going to go for like the 6 p.m. on Thursday night, I guess is what I'm saying.
What do you mean by zany shit?
Like when he said that, he said She-Hulk was an oversized green porn star, or when he said that fans don't care about Martian Manhunter, and if you actually know who he is, you're going to basically something along the lines of be alone for the rest of your life. And went on to say some other things. There were some articles. I think they're all on the Mary Sue, if you're interested.
I'm not interested in anything that Mary Sue has to say.
Hmm?
Nothing. I was just making a joke.
No, sorry. I didn't catch it. No, I wasn't being facetious. I legitimately didn't hear you.
Oh, no, I said I'm not interested in anything that Mary Sue has to say, which was a joke.
Okay. Well, I mean, it was on other outlets, so if you're curious, it obviously found its way into other areas and you know, comic creators like Gail Simone were none too pleased to hear some of these things.
Okay, but Gail Simone, to preface this, is not pleased with anything because she's a troll.
I mean,
Secret
sure.
Six related.
Right.
I'm just she drives me up the goddamn wall. Because it sounds like... Oh,
well, I mean, to each his own, I suppose.
Well, I mean,
right?
I used to follow her on Twitter, and I think she's a great writer, but, you know, her personality I really don't care for. Just like David Goyer, I really don't care for his personality, but I think he can write the hell out of some stuff, you know?
Well, at least we know he can't direct, right?
Well, yes. You know, I really don't... Whenever I read interviews with people or watch interviews, I really don't... I have a hard time caring about what they're saying, honestly, because it's... I try not to let that be indicative of the work. I try to let the work speak for itself.
Separating the personality from the art. There's something to be said for that.
And I have the same problem with Sean Murphy, because I think he's a terrible human being, but you know, his art's pretty damn good. So who might argue with that? Hmm.
I never heard that about Sean Murphy.
Well, I don't know if he's done stuff, but his personality is just so... He's so arrogant in interviews that I've read and times I've heard him speak that I have such a hard time... Like, I have to not read anything that he says and just let his art speak for himself.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Does that make more sense?
No. And especially, I think we all have people like that in the comic book industry that we're sort of torn. And this just really ties back to our episode a couple weeks ago about the idea that in this day and age with Twitter and whatnot, everybody is in a rush to get their personality out there, or everyone is being told by their publisher that they, or you know, their PR people, that they have to get their personality out there. And so frequently you're getting 24/7 reports on these people all the time. So whether or not you care about what they're having for lunch or what movie they're attending tonight, you're going to hear it. And so you have that constant barrage and you have to weigh that against their work.
Oh, totally. And it's tough, but you know, we get through it. But I mean, so like with David S. Goyer, I'm excited for the movie, especially since it was rewritten. So I assume most of his shit was taken out.
I hope so.
I mean, I don't know if I'd say that Zack Snyder's films are devoid of his soul, but, you know, I thought that his adaptation of Watchmen was probably the best that we're ever going to get. You know, I even like how he changed the ending for it.
At least visually, yeah. Absolutely. From a visual standpoint, that was fantastic.
Well, that's the thing is, he is such a visual storyteller, and comic book, the medium itself, is such a visual way to tell stories that people are going to bring up shit from Man of Steel, but, you know, I still really enjoyed it because it's Superman who's been Superman for less than a week. He's a baby god still trying to figure out his powers.
Yeah.
You know, he's killed Zod multiple times throughout multiple iterations of the character, so I had no issue with that.
Yeah, I was actually surprised that movie, with how
thank
many
God
people
for Michael
were
Shannon.
Yeah, yeah.
Michael Shannon.
But what kills me is, you know, it's like, oh, you know, he was barreling through a city, and how many people died because of all of the buildings collapsing? Okay, pick up a comic book. Metropolis gets destroyed almost every month.
Yeah, that was, I mean,
and,
yeah.
And you're telling me in a...
Have those people heard of Angel Grove? Oh, I mean, quit complaining.
Jesus. Well, but here's the thing, it's like, and I realize it's mostly, what irritates me is when comic people are complaining about it. When moviegoers are complaining, it's not that big of a deal to me because they're not as familiar with the character as I am. And it's one of those things where in a post 9/11 world, which is when the movie takes place, you're going to tell me that there's something happening and there's not an escape route that's in place or drills haven't been done in that building to get people out right away.
Isn't it weird that people complained about that with Man of Steel, but nobody said, well, the Avengers totally fucked up New York City for the most part?
Yeah.
I mean, the movies went back. The movies had to address that. I mean, that's what the freaking Captain America 3 is going to essentially be, is, you know.
That's the premise of all the crime in the Daredevil TV series. Like,
yeah. Oh, that's right. Oh, that was really clever. I forgot how they sort of did that. Oh,
everyone forgets that except for me.
No, that was really clever. I remember that. I was like, wow, it's how they wove that into Daredevil was, yeah. No, I agree. That was neat.
But yeah, I only ask because it is coming out this weekend, and George, I think you mentioned that to me earlier today, and I totally forgot. Like, I spaced. For some reason, I thought this movie was still coming out next to Captain America, and I was like, that's going to be a really tough weekend.
Yeah, I mean, I've been waiting my entire life for this, and I think so many people have, too.
I think my only beef, and, you know, George, feel to agree or disagree, because I'm certain you have thoughts on this, but I feel like the success of the Dark Knight trilogy, which... I liked, inevitably told DC that this was what they had to do for everything. Like, this was their money-making angle or perspective or aesthetic. And obviously, Christopher Nolan, who knows to what extent, is a big overarching executive producer. Again, who knows how much influence he really has or if he's just getting paid every month with a check. But I feel like that really set a trajectory for DC in terms of what their all of their stuff needs to look like and what it needs to feel like. Obviously, the TV shows didn't quite follow in lockstep, but it seems like the success of that trilogy has sort of forced DC to proceed in such a fashion, which, I mean, you follow the money, I guess. Anyway, I'll stop. What are your thoughts?
I think that DC is trying to stand apart from Marvel.
Sure.
Here's the bottom line. Here's the issue. And this is all I'm going to say on this topic. Warner Brothers needs a Kevin Feige. You need one voice, one vision, and that's what DC's lacking. And they've got Christopher Nolan, who is executive producing. And yeah, if you're going to hire him as a producer, I think he's done producing now. But if you're going to hire him initially to help set the tone, of course it's going to be dark and real. But he's also somebody that's not as invested in the characters as somebody like Kevin Feige was, who produced X-Men and Spider-Man. Yeah. And so until you get somebody that's, and I don't want somebody like Geoff Johns stepping into this position. Not that I have anything against him, but he's better served working for the comics. But somebody like...
Yeah, totally agree with that too.
But
yeah.
Somebody that's the head of the DC movie studio, like Kevin Smith was going to be years ago. Which you can go back and check out Fatman on Batman, and there's articles about how he was actually approached about heading up a Warner Brothers DC department. But you need somebody like that in order to bring some type of balance to these movies. And granted, all we have to go on is Man of Steel, what we're expecting Batman versus Superman to be because of Man of Steel, and subsequently Suicide Squad because it's directed by David Ayers and, you know, based off of Man of Steel. You know, it's hard to say it, but Warner Brothers needs a Kevin Feige.
Yeah, yeah, totally, totally. I also wonder, what do you guys think about the whole... There's been a lot made of the fact that I think someone culled all of it together and said that if you take each and every snippet, trailer, footage, et cetera, of Batman versus Superman, we've already seen 12 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, I mean...
Do you think that that was a good idea because they felt like they had something to prove as the disparaging remarks rolled out? Or do you think that they overexposed the movie?
I honestly think that they're playing us. You know, they're doing the, here is the first 30 minutes of the movie. And then the movie itself is actually going to be vastly different. At least that's what I hope. You know, that like they're trying to play us with all these trailers and say, look, this is what this movie's going to be. And actually what is going to come out of the movie is going to be either a similar story, like a slightly similar story, or a story that is like vastly different. It's going to be a complete left turn because there has been so much exposure to this on this movie. So they can't say that they've revealed the entire plot because that's just not how these movies succeed. You know, you think it like about what you thought about Avengers before it came out. There was no way you could have predicted the story based on the trailers that they showed. And I mean, or maybe I'm just remembering incorrectly, but I think that they're purposefully trying to show us as much as they can to say, look at how this movie's going to be. But actually, they're showing us very, very little of it. So I don't know. I have some hope that Warner Brothers at least has a card up their sleeve here.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the thing that you have to remember is it's not Warner Brothers or DC that gets the final say on the trailer cuts. It's the marketing companies that they hire. And so the marketing companies are going to cut it in a way that they think that they can bring in the most sales possible for it. But that being said, I don't think that they're dumb enough to play their card and say, hey, Doomsday's going to be in it, and he's going to be the biggest villain.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially given the title of the film. Like, there's so much, I think, that we haven't seen, and I think that's for the best. Like, we're definitely going to get at least two or three, oh my goodness, I can't believe they did that in this movie, whether that's good or bad.
Yeah.
You know, we're still going to get those, and it's going to make the movie regardless. Like, this movie's going to do well regardless. So it's just going to be a matter of, you know, this is going to turn the tide and say people will realize maybe this wasn't as bad as we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I think this is really going to set the trajectory for DC in terms of their film universe. A lot of people with Man of Steel, they were like, well, it's too soon to tell, and it's just a solo movie. Let's wait until we have some semblance of a team movie before we start casting too many aspersions on it. But it's going to be interesting if this movie underperforms, which who knows what underperforming is with a movie like this, right? If this movie underperforms, what it does for DC's absolutely batshit insane film schedule that stretches all the way into the, like, 2022 or something at this point. Like, are they at a point of no return or not with any of this stuff? It's a good question.
Yeah.
Well, we'll find out.
Yeah, we will absolutely find out this upcoming weekend.
What are your thoughts on the Batman v Superman movie? You can send those thoughts to our email address, ircb@destroythesybe.org, or you can let us know over on Twitter, @ircbpodcast. We're on Tumblr, @destroythecyborg, and over on our subreddit, @ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. Our host and producer is Mike Rappin. This week's music was brought to you by The Four Owls and Infinity Shred. You can find more of The Four Owls on Bandcamp at thefourowls.bandcamp.com. You can find more of Infinity Shred at infinityshred.bandcamp.com. No matter what type of podcast you're looking for, you can find it, or something close to it, on Twitter via the hashtag PodernFamily. Check it out and support small podcasts like us. Finally, if you like the show, tell someone about it. Rate us online or write to us. Tell us what you're thinking about comics. And from all of us here at the podcast, thank you for listening.